Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Have you ever felt like you've tried everything to heal from the pain of sexual abuse, and yet nothing seems to really be helping? Well, one of the reasons why most people struggle to break free from the pain of past child abuse is because the techniques out there are positioned as a one-size-fits-all answer. What I want you to know is that there are actually three distinct phases on the path to recovery, and I'd love to share with you about these phases, what issues you must resolve to move to the next phase, and what kinds of support you'll need in order to move forward as quickly and completely as possible. The road to recovery is much easier when you know what stage you're in and what to do next. So don't hesitate. Go to www.rachelgrantcoaching.com/checklist and get your 9-page guide today. Now, on to our show. Welcome, everyone, to Beyond Surviving, the safe space for survivors of childhood sexual abuse to receive support, resources, and share their stories. Beyond Surviving is about freedom, healing, connection, and even laughter and fun. Most importantly, it's about letting go of the pain of abuse and finally moving on. I'm Rachel Grant, and for those of you who don't yet know me, I've been a sexual abuse recovery coach since 2007 and am the author of Beyond Surviving, the Final Stage of Recovery from Sexual Abuse. You can learn more about me and the Beyond Surviving program at rachelgrantcoaching.com. Now, today we are so very lucky to have with us Roland Ball, who is going to be sharing with us about how we can resolve complex trauma and PTSD, and we're also going to be exploring the process of dissociation. So I want to tell you a little bit about Roland. He's actually originally from Holland, but currently lives in Spain, Barcelona. I am so very jealous. And he has gone through a transition from osteopathic bodywork to working with psychological trauma only.
Roland and I have a lot in common. He uses cognitive and somatic body-based psychotherapeutic approaches to effectively treat complex trauma and PTSD. I really wanted Roland to come on the show today to bring in his work around somatics. I get into that a little bit. I'm getting into it more and more, but I'm really looking forward to his perspective about how we can use somatics to treat, these symptoms that we have as survivors of trauma. His approach focuses on regulating, processing, containing the processes of dissociation, including that fight, flight, freeze, please response, and relearning boundaries and vulnerability. And that's just a nutshell. You know, he's doing a lot more stuff as well. So we are so lucky to have him here with us. And I can't wait to enjoy this conversation today. Roland, welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks for having me.
So I want to jump right in. I'm so curious to know what all of this entails when we're talking about the process of dissociation. This is a word that is thrown around a lot in the world of healing and trauma. People get all, I'm dissociating, now. Oh, I'm dissociating again. It might be overused, I think, in some ways. And I think that happens because people don't have a really clear understanding of what it actually is, what it entails, and how it applies to those of us who have experienced trauma. So let's start there. What are your thoughts about that?
Sounds good. I think, as you already mentioned, I've called it the process of dissociation rather than dissociation as a final destination. Mm-hmm. So the different levels of how you kind of fragment in order to survive or dissociate. And so you go through an overwhelming experience that usually has one dominant emotion present for you, be it anger, fear, or sadness. And often that emotion in itself is already too much to contain. So you kind of even push further out from that mm-hmm. into excessive thoughts, into addiction, and then finally into a more numb or free state, which you might call a more severe form of dissociation, which often goes together with depression and chronic pain, feeling frozen. And so, that's what I refer to when I talk about the process of dissociation, that there are really different levels to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also you have to, as you work with complex trauma, sexual abuse, PTSD, you have to work through those different levels of dissociation. And so coming back from that dissociated state, which is excessive thoughts, kind of people live here rather than down here, mm. or even kind of pushed out of the head, feeling outside of themselves, looking in from the outside. So that process of healing is bringing oneself back again in the body and meeting those deeper levels of emotion, which are still alive and giving all the physical and emotional symptoms, going in between basically fight, flight, and please activation, and then going back into the freeze or dissociating response. And it goes back and forth. You go into the excessive thoughts where guilt, blame, self-reproach, shame, embarrassment, all these kind of processes that happen up here with excessive thoughts. Then you freeze, dissociate to a kind of more severe state. Then when the depression lasts for some time, at some point you fall back into feeling the body again for a while and being in the fight, flight, and please mode. So that's basically what complex PTSD or PTSD is. You go on and you go from on to
like
off and then back.
Like exactly. A cycle that you're in. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Thanks for breaking that down a little bit. And, one of the things that I've noticed in my work with survivors of abuse, and certainly I've experienced myself, are these levels of dissociation. And one of the things that I often explore is healthy dissociation. Like there is this place in which we kind of just space out sometimes, like the brain just takes a little break. And now I don't know if you would actually categorize that under this, or if, when you think about levels of dissociation, if you would categorize spacing out as a low level, but that the brain is not active all of the time, right? We're not present 100% of the time. We space out, we daydream, we get into our thoughts in our head, and then, but this process that becomes exacerbated when we've had trauma and we have a harder time staying in our body, or we're going through those cycles of being triggered, being activated, and then the system not being able to cope or handle that, and going into that place of, you know, dissociation, kind of reaching those higher levels. Anything you would add to that or change about what I said there?
I think I use dissociation quite liberally. Like you said as well, there's a dissociation which can be healthy when you need to focus on a task at hand. You also block out certain other parts. So in a way, you kind of concentrate or focus or fragment in order to, yeah, towards to get things done. And so you can call that also a form of dissociation, but in a healthy way. And I think, yeah, I think even with emotions, we have to look at all these things and kind of where is it constructive and where is it destructive? So you can have anger, for example, which I often relate to boundaries, which I'm sure we're going to kind of dig in a little bit more today. When there's healthy anger, when you express your yes, when you express your no, when you push back when you need to, setting your boundaries helps to counteract a lack of self-esteem, reestablishes your self-worth. So there's a healthy way of dealing with anger. There's also a healthy way of dealing with sadness when there's healthy grief. It's very healing. And there can be also a destructive way of dealing with anger. When you hold it in, it eats away your self-esteem, your self-worth. Or when you become explosive with it, you push people away or you break up relationships. So I guess dissociation, you can look at it from two ways as well. It can be destructive or it can be constructive.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about the darker side of dissociation. You know, one of the why do we want to learn to either... Well, this is a curiosity question. Do you think people actually can reach a place where they no longer dissociate in this way that's unhealthy? Can we learn to do that? Is that something that we want to acquire as a skill? Is that even a possibility? And, well, let's just start with that. What do you think about that?
I think as you work on yourself, you build up more resilience and containment. Then again, I would... keep yourself with healthy expectations that you're going to have stresses in your life. You're going to have ups and downs. So you'll have times where you're going to dissociate a bit. You're going to, yeah, you're going to fall back in some of your default patterns, no matter how much you've healed at your past wounds. And I think if you can kind of keep those expectations somewhat in check and kind of, how do you say it in English? Kind of roll with the punches.
Yeah.
If you can roll with the punches, then you can bring yourself back to containment and resilience much quicker.
I love that. Well, I think we'll talk more about this as we go along as well, but since it's kind of present here in our conversation now, this is, I think, a big piece that I try to convey to those who, you know, who I'm working with, which is that there are kind of two goals in healing from trauma. One is, in many ways, decreasing our activation. How easily are we activated, right? How much of a live wire are we, in other words? And then also having a higher resiliency so that that activation doesn't happen as often. And if it does, being able to bounce back quickly, feeling equipped, like you have a set of tools and processes and strategies that you know that you can rely on that are going to bring you back into that, I like what you call it sometimes, containment or alignment, you know, settle down already. And so, yeah, we need to have that feeling of that we can do that so that, you know, we feel empowered even in the face of, exactly as you say, life happens, stressors come, unexpected things arise, and how do we take care of ourselves in those moments? So how did
I like to add a little bit to that. I think a few things that help with coming back to containment is, I mean, there's obviously the working on your past emotion. I usually call it emotional residue. It kind of resonates with me. So working on your past wounds and bringing them to some kind of resolution. But also not to fall into old patterns. What helps is to kind of rearrange how you have organized your life. So having to move away from an abusive situation, abusive people, forming new relationships. So all those things help to not relate to your past. kind of coping patterns too much.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep them at bay as much as possible, because you want to kind of start to relate to another part of you where the pain doesn't live.
Yes.
And so that includes people, that includes new activities, that includes following your passions.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that so much.
And I think that comes in the later stage of healing, first of all. Well, yes or no. I mean, removing yourself from an abusive environment is very necessary before you start to heal.
Mm-hmm.
But following your passions comes a bit later. First, you might have to deal with what holds you back and what traps your energy before you kind of can move into that.
Yeah, it's such an important thing. I'm forgetting his last name. I think it's Salinas, but Joel, he's a neuroscientist or neurologist, and he was recently speaking at a conference and talking about how the brain is very much impacted by our environment. And the beautiful opportunity is, as our environments change, the brain can change and adapt to those new environments. And I think you're onto something here, that if we're in an abusive environment, not that healing work can't happen, but you've got a little more of an uphill climb. Because, you know, and I experienced this very personally when I was in a 10-year relationship that was very abusive verbally and physically. And I was trying to work on, you know, the sexual wounding, you know, and the sexual abuse from my grandfather. And then I would come home into a space where all of those fears that I was dealing with and all those beliefs that I was dealing with as a result of past trauma were almost being reiterated and in the present moment, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was very hard. And truth be told, the real impetus of my healing and my growth and change happened after I divorced and I was out of that situation. I finally had the space to really step in to fuller healing and take the energy, that's right. And that's what really set me off in my course. And, you know, here I am today. What set you off into your course, to your path? Mm. Like, how did you arrive here to be doing this work and to have such a passion and care for helping those who experience trauma?
I think I have a few different stories to that question. I started with osteopathic work, and I worked a long time with kind of the body physically and the more subtle areas of working with the body. And I could see that when there was a lot of emotional stuff going on for those people I was working with, a problem, a physical problem or tension would shift, but it wouldn't necessarily resolve. And so I got more interested into, okay, what's really happening there? What am I missing, or what do I need to deepen that I'm actually addressing, not just the symptom, but more the cause of what the body shows, which is chronic pain very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got more interested in delving into the psychological part, working with the emotions, the trauma. And so that kind of, from a more structural point of view, that set me off in exploring more that area.
Mm.
Then probably from a more personal point of view, or from a deeper incentive, in my late teens and my early 20s, I suffered from quite a bit of anxiety and depression myself, based on suppressed anger and some kind of developmental traumas I've been dealing with. And that kind of set the stage initially for kind of working on myself and also exploring body work and healing myself as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. It's a really wonderful thing. You know, so many of my clients, you know, they are experiencing chronic pain. They have, you know, fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome, and as we begin to more and more understand the correlation between these symptoms, that those are actually symptoms, not the actual disorders in some ways, if you frame it that way, and that the root of the problem is this unresolved trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So I give major props to you. I think there's a lot of work that's happening now in the medical field and in those areas where it has traditionally been looking at, you know, pain as what needs to be treated. And people are beginning to understand more and more that what needs to be treated is the underlying cause, which is my trauma. So it's amazing that you caught on to that and made that transition. And yeah, you know, I think we all have those personal motivations as well. Like when we've experienced pain or anxiety or depression and struggled, then, you know, we have that place in our hearts where we want to really step in and walk alongside other people in that journey. One of the other things that you've talked about and that you work on quite intentionally is our boundaries. And so I'd love to hear your personal definition of what a boundary is. I think everybody has different ideas about that. And so, yeah, how would you even just simply define what a boundary even is?
I put it in as simple terms as possible. Are you able to express your yes and are you able to express your no? And so that really sums it up, really. And like when I work with clients, I use that as little exercises. For example, when they can't express the yes or no, even in a therapeutic setting, I ask them to put a hand in front of them like that. And I say, okay, can you close your eyes and see how that feels? And very often for people who are really abused, it's already very challenging to do that because this is kind of a somatic expression of back off, or I'm holding my space. And when that's not been allowed when you were young as a child, when you've gone through a lot of child abuse, just the act of doing that with your hand already brings up a lot of anxiety. And so very often you don't have to start with boundaries. You can use boundaries, but then what comes up is that pleasing response or the anxiety that kind of overrides the setting of relearning of boundaries. So you kind of delve in a little bit into working with boundaries, but then you see that, oh, I'll have to be really careful and not push for relearning those boundaries, but first also take on board the anxiety that comes up or the pleasing response. And the pleasing response is like I have to adapt to my environment in order to not be more abused. So I submit, I hold back, I start to please. And so again, you come back, you come into that feel of a collapsed sense of self-worth, self-esteem, and a non-existence of boundaries. And so I'm taking one direction now with explaining a little bit how you can work with boundaries. But with severe neglect and the pleasing response that flows out of it, you have to be very careful with setting boundaries. And then bit by bit, as you express your boundaries, and that can be somatically through holding a hand up, or it could even be crossing your arms and holding your space.
Okay.
Then a little bit further in the process, you might actually say, back off, or I'm really angry, or you might express it to your abuser, like, I don't want this, or go away. And so you work with different kind of intensities of anger to reestablish anger. And that brings back a sense of self-esteem, sense of self-worth, and also empowerment. And that all goes together, healthy boundaries, suppressed anger, self-esteem, self-worth. And then empowerment, or having the will to actually move things again in your life. So boundaries are so vital in the healing process. And again, it's a word that's been thrown out there so easily, boundaries, but there's a lot of different complexities that relate to boundaries.
I so agree. And I think it's really wonderful, the kind of association that you're setting between setting boundaries and coming back into a place of an empowered no and an empowered yes. Sometimes people think that boundaries are always in the negative, right? It's the things that you don't want, and that's the boundary. The boundaries are also the things I do want, and the things that I am a yes to. Those count as well. And absolutely, coming out of this people-pleasing, oh my goodness, you know, I think every single client I work with has on some level this people-pleasing behavior. And you're absolutely right. It's a way that we survive. You know, we become adaptive. And this is in some ways a superpower, because this is also why survivors of trauma often are able to empathize with lots of different kinds of people. They're able to connect with lots of different kinds of people it's a strength, but it becomes a weakness when it means we're constantly sacrificing ourselves, when we're not able to hold those boundaries with other people. And I loved what you were saying there about how even just using the physicality, like what a representation, a physical representation of no, like a hand out in front of you or crossing your arms, when we can't find the language sometimes, especially because of that anxiety and the activation that starts to happen, because this is unfamiliar territory. It's uncomfortable. We've been trained that, you know, if you stand up for yourself, something bad is going to happen potentially. For many people, that's the case. And so using those somatic responses to work through the anxiety about it, even guilt. Some of my clients talk about feeling guilty about setting boundaries, like they're doing something bad or wrong. And so reframing all of that and coming back into ownership of that is so critical to being able to heal, for sure.
I would even say flight sometimes is a way of setting boundaries as well. When you don't have the empowerment to deal with the situation, it's worse to become stagnant and stay stuck. It's better to even remove yourself from an environment. Yeah. And sometimes people, like you say, they go into guilt or blame with that. But I think flight in certain situations, when you don't have the empowerment yet, at least you keep some sense of integrity. So I would even put that in certain situations as part of a healthy boundaries response.
Yeah. And get out of Dodge. Do you know that expression?
No, I don't.
I don't know where Dodge is, but you're supposed to get out of it. It's just one of those euphemisms like, you know, run away, get out of here, take a break. And I think that's really spot on, Roland, that these are actually ways that we can sometimes use these activated responses, these stress responses, to our benefit. It's not always a bad thing that's happening. Like, use it when you need it in that way. That's a really great idea.
Yeah. And then I marry boundaries and vulnerability together. They go together, that you need healthy vulnerability, but you also need healthy boundaries. You need the two together, and they work in tandem with each other. So you'll have to relearn with whom it's safe to open up, with whom it's safe to share. And then you also have to be aware with whom kind of you have to set your yes and no and keep them out. And if you don't have your vulnerability in the right place, you open up too soon, too quick with somebody who might take advantage of you, which very often happens when your default is already a pleasing response.
That
you trust too quick, and then that sets the stage for reenactment, like the pleaser attracts a narcissist very often. Right? So you reenact your past patterns. And so you need both. You need to be able to kind of tap into your vulnerability and heal the wounds there. But at the same time, you need your boundaries in place to kind of protect your vulnerability, with whom it's safe to open up and with whom it's kind of you have to hold back or keep them out or keep them at a distance. And it can be a tough lesson, because sometimes it's with kind of family members that you have to keep them at a good distance. So again, not to get triggered again, not to refer to your old coping strategies and patterns too much.
Yeah, you know, this is such an important piece that we're discussing here, because when we are not taking care of ourselves in that way by setting those boundaries and stepping away, there are so many expectations that people will put on us, or that we might put on ourselves. Oh, it's family. I should go to that birthday party, right? I should do that thing. And even when we begin to recognize that that being there is actually to put ourselves in a toxic situation, people will feel guilty. And I sometimes use the analogy, like, if you were, you know, standing outside of a room and, you know, I told you inside this room is just like the worst noxious gas ever, and as soon as you step into that room, you're just going to feel terrible. Would you walk into that room? You know, and people are like, oh, well, no, I wouldn't do that to myself. But we will do that in relationships because of all the expectations and the shoulds. And so giving ourselves permission to not do that, to actually hold those boundaries, even with family members, is super, super important, for sure. Roland, I'm finding myself curious about how you work somatically. I'm wondering if you can share with us maybe a somatic tool that people can use to address any of these things we've been talking about, maybe to work with that moment of feeling dissociated. What somatic strategies or, you know, exercises might you offer around that, or using somatics to deal with anxiety? Maybe you have a couple of favorite little techniques that you'd like to share with us today.
Sure, I can share a few things. I mean, I work with both the cognitive part and the somatic part. So what we've been discussing is kind of the cognitive part, having insight into your particular process of dissociation, how you've built up your own levels of dissociation. So first of all, I work with that to get an insight or a roadmap into those patterns. And then if I consider how I do sessions, there's always a part where I ask the person to close their eyes and just really start where they are, not to push for getting somewhere, not to push for relaxation. And so when you feel anxious or when you feel depressed or when you feel dissociated, can you start right there in this moment? And there's a feeling to those states. There's a feeling to anxiety. There's a feeling to depression. There's a feeling to dissociation. It sits in certain parts in the body. So it's just simple questions. Like I usually start with, if I can invite you to close your eyes, can you see where most of your energy is concentrated? And if they can't find the words, I say, is that your head? Or is that your throat area? Or is that your chest area? Just so they get a sensation of where they're living, kind of energetically speaking. And then from there, just taking a deep breath to say, well, I feel I'm really busy in my thoughts. I might say, okay, what's the feeling of that busyness of your thoughts? Could you feel it as a sensation in the head? Does it give pressure? Does it give tension? Does it sit around your head or does it sit inside your head? And so the moment you shift it from being carried away by their thoughts and having to overcome or having to solve that problem, but you put the focus on what's happening in the here and the now, that shifts that process away from duality into just observing what's happening in the moment. And so you take the mind out of a dual state and you bring it into what I call non-dual observation. Mm-hmm. And that already brings a certain calmness, it brings a certain presence, it brings a certain awareness to the here and now. And from there you take it deeper. You might start with feeling dissociated, and we stay with that for 5 or 10 minutes, and then as that dissociation starts to become a little bit more flexible, you might suddenly feel that anxiety comes to you or sadness comes to you. And so if they're able to voice it, I usually pick it up and see it. But if they're able to voice it, then I'll pick it up from there. I say, okay, is that a familiar feeling to you? If you would take me back to your past, where did this similar feeling also for you was really present for you somewhere in the past? Or which context or with what kind of person or perhaps period in your life? And then from there, you take it a little bit deeper. And you kind of keep asking questions as to, okay, what's moving in your body right now? Where is it felt? Where is it safe for you to put a hand on your body where that feeling is being stirred up for you, where you feel triggered? And so bit by bit, you unravel those, what I already said, those processes of dissociation. You take them from the dissociation, depression, a bit deeper into the might be excessive thoughts or addictions, and then into the more core emotions. And you kind of shift in between talking about it and talking into it, which is the feeling part.
Ooh, I love that. Talking about it to talking into it or feeling into it. Oh, yes. I love that. There's a video that Roland did on excessive thinking. I'm not making that up, right? That's right?
No, I did. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I have it on my resource page. So if you go to rachelgrantcoaching.com/resources/brain, you'll be able to find that video that he's done, and you can delve into this even a little bit more and be taken through a very specific process that Roland's been describing here today. What really stands out to me from what you shared there is how we can move from I'm thinking about something to locating what's the feeling that's there around that thought, and then locating it in the body, connecting it into a space and a place in the body, and then feeling into that more and being with that. And by way of this, I love that we get out of this kind of rumination and we bring it into that present space, and we can also practice connecting it back to a past moment. How'd I do? Did I get that right?
Yeah, it's a good sign. Yeah.
Sweet. Cool. Roland, anything else that you want to share with our listeners today? Anything you want them to know for those who are on this path and are dealing with complex PTSD and all of these symptoms and this journey of healing?
So many things I can add to that. I think it's important to take your time, but also seek help when the time comes for it, when you feel ready. Really reach out. When you work with somebody one-on-one or even in group work or online courses, it really speeds up your process. You have to focus on those boundaries and vulnerability, what we talked about today too. Yeah, bring that to a kind of integration, new level. Work on those containment and resilience issues. Don't let money become an issue for you. I think it's more important to focus on intention. And as you grow, as you become more empowered, also money and relationships start to come to you again. And so I think there's kind of a process too. You feel really dissociated, not able to move, and you just have to show up. You have to listen. And then as you show up and listen, that dissociation starts to melt a little bit and you come into the next stage. You still feel overwhelmed, but not so dissociated anymore. Yeah. And you have to work with the kind of what I call coping emotions, or dealing with excessive thoughts, anger, fear, and sadness, and bring that to a bit more containment, bring that to more resilience. And then again, it starts to give you more. It's like your energy that's stuck in those emotions in duality. Slowly on, they become either processed, they become released, or they become integrated. And then again, there's more energy available and you go to the next step where you start to integrate things in your life. And that also means that you have more financial income. You start to form better relationships, healthy relationships, which create synergy and also more energy. And then you're able maybe to work with somebody on an individual level. I know it costs a little bit more, but there's these kind of stages of recovery that you have to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. Money is energy. I'm focusing a little bit on money because many people get stuck on that.
They do, yeah.
Money is energy, and you need to have enough energy to kind of lift yourself to the next step.
Yep. Thank you so much, Roland. I really dig that and appreciate the perspective of, first of all, we heal. We can accelerate our healing when we do it in collaboration with someone, so whether that is an online community or a coach or a therapist or whatever it might be. Don't try to heal in isolation. It just doesn't work. It just does not work. And this is a question that often comes up, you know, when people are seeking resources. Survivors of abuse are often in financial straits because, of course, it's hard to work or you struggle, you all these different things. And the mindset of, you know, finding a way to invest in ourselves at whatever level we can, like make the first best investment. And then that's going to help you reclaim some energy. And then you're going to have more vitality and more motivation, and you can go to the next level and the next level. I hear so often people say, well, when I finally have the money, I will. I'm like, man, like I get that. And I've been in that place, but we really need to try to find a way to flip that around, make that investment and find a way to make that investment. And then it's going to return tenfold. You know, you're going to have that investment back so quickly when your system is regulated, when you're healthy, when you're confident, when you're empowered, you know, all of those things. I've seen that in my own life, and certainly in the lives of so many of my clients.
Exactly. Yeah. Start with an open mind. Just start, kind of move away from making a statement of I can't. It's like, okay, what can I do?
Yeah.
And so rather say, I can't because this or that. You say, okay, I might not be able to do this right now. What can I do right now?
Yes.
Like, okay, I can't invest in personal treatment, but I can dig into all the free stuff that is on certain websites that I resonate with. I can buy a bunch of books or ebooks. Then maybe the next step is I can do some online work or be in a Facebook closed group or whatever. And then again, you kind of through the interaction, you already learn a lot. You have insights. You grow in your learning process, your healing process. Yeah. And then when the time is ready, when you keep that intention steady in your focus, then at some point it will come to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for being here and being my guest today, Roland. I really love everything that you shared. And I want to make sure everybody knows how to get in touch with you. So you can email Roland@RolandBall. That's just R-O-L-A-N-D-B-A-L.com. And you can, of course, check out his website, rollandball.com. You work with folks all over the world,
yeah.
No matter where they are, right? So if what you're hearing from Roland today is resonating with you, no matter where you are in the world, feel free to reach out to him. Roland also has a Trauma Essential ebook series, and you can get that at rolandball.com/trauma-essentials. And all these links will be in the show notes, so you all can go and look there. There's also an audio course about trauma care, and that's at rolandball.com/trauma-care. So please go check out Roland's resources, get connected. He has so many wonderful things on his website that you can take advantage of, and certainly reach out to him for support and to learn more about how you can work together if you're feeling led to do so. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and joining us today. Also, remember, you can visit rachelgrantcoaching.com to check out the resources that are available there and learn more about sexual abuse recovery coaching. And please be sure to subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a note if you like what you're hearing. Don't leave us a note if you don't like what you're hearing. And then come back next time, because we have so much more to share. Until then, take good care of you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.